Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to talk about some of the stories that matter. Yes, folks, we're saying welcome back because we know we have family members who are joining us from last week. We had such great conversations. We're going to do it again this week. Coming up later on in this hour, we're going to talk about what happens when black men make a decision to take responsibility for the crime that's happening in their communities. I mean, this idea that there is crime happening, we see young boys involved in this criminal behavior, and we don't say anything. Who's responsible? Well, one grandfather put out on Facebook that he is responsible for what happened to his grandson, who was a drug dealer, who was killed during some type of drug deal over the last couple of days. He put a letter out on Facebook stating that he is responsible for what happened, offering an apology. So I want to talk today about whether black older men are responsible for the behavior of our young black men. Yeah, I'm talking the ones who are involved in drug dealing, the 20-year-olds, the teens. Who's responsible for them? Does it fall on the shoulders of older black men? I want to talk about that later on in this hour. In the second hour, I want to talk about what's going on down in Washington, D.C., and what's happening all over the country since 1 p.m. today. Women and men have been walking out. It was a national walkout over sexual assault accusations against Brett Kavanaugh. A second woman has come forward. I want to talk about that and talk about what is next. But first, the Little Rock Nine was a group of nine African-American students enrolled in Little Rock Central High School in 1957. Their enrollment was followed by the Little Rock crisis, in which the students were initially prevented from entering their racially segregated school, and the governor of Arkansas actually prevented them from attending. They then were able to enter only after the intervention of President Dwight D. Eisenhower. I want to talk today because we are celebrating the work of the Little Rock Nine, what they did to integrate the all-white Little Rock Central High School. They were selected on the criteria of excellent grades and attendance, and the Little Rock Nine consisted of Ernest Green, Elizabeth Eckford, Jefferson Thomas, Terrence Roberts, Carlotta Walls Lanier, Minnie Jean Brown, Gloria Ray Kallmark, Thelma Mothershed, and Melba Petillo Bills. Ernest Green was the first African-American to graduate from Central High School. What is very interesting as we think about what happened today, September 24th in 1957, President Eisenhower dispatched nearly 1,000 paratroopers and federalized 10,000 men to actually go down to ensure that the school would be open to the nine students. I want to begin today by playing a clip of the Little Rock Nine. They appeared on Oprah talking about what happened to them. Let's start with that clip, and then we'll hear from President Eisenhower as we celebrate and salute Little Rock Nine today.
1957, Arkansas. The nation was riveted by the Little Rock Nine. Nine black teenagers who were set to integrate Little Rock Central High School, but it seemed the entire state of Arkansas meant to stop them. The governor called out the National Guard, not to protect the students, but to block their entrance to school. And threatening white students jeered them at every turn. Finally, the black students were allowed to enter the school through a side door, and the white mob erupted in a riot.
Mob rule can not be allowed to override the decision of our courts.
President Eisenhower sent over 1,000 members of the 101st Airborne Division to Little Rock to escort the students to school. But once inside the schoolhouse doors, the Little Rock Nine found that their struggles for respect and equality had only just begun.
Nearly four decades later, the Little Rock Nine revealed the brutal reality they endured.
What was that first day like, Carlotta?
It was an atmosphere of hostility, of war. So you put on your armor, turn your face into your game face, and got ready to go to war.
My mother and I almost got hanged that day. People with ropes circled underneath their arm and over their shoulder, as they put it, ready to do business, ready to hang a nigga.
Did you all cry? Did you ever go home and cry those nights?
Oh, yeah.
We had a lot of real physical pain to carry home to cry about.
Beat up.
I really did get acid in my eyes. To this day, I wear glasses because of back of my right heel hurts because of people walking on the back of my heels. I carry scars on my legs for people kicking me. We all carry these scars in one form or another.
celebrating the Little Rock Nine. It was on this day back in 1957 when President Eisenhower had, after dispatching nearly 1,000 paratroopers, federalizing 10,000 Arkansas National Guards to protect the school and the students to make sure the students could enter and be peacefully welcomed into the school. They had white people lined up in both the front of the school and the back of the school. They did not want their schools to be integrated. I want to play a clip of President Eisenhower responding to why he made the decision to intervene.
Disorderly mobs have deliberately prevented the carrying out of proper orders from a federal court. Local authorities have not eliminated that violent opposition. And under the law, I yesterday issued a proclamation calling upon the mob to disperse. This morning, the mob again gathered in front of the Central High School of Little Rock, obviously for the purpose of again preventing the carrying out of the court's order relating to the admission of Negro children to that school. Whenever normal agencies prove inadequate to the task, and it becomes necessary for the executive branch of the federal government to use its powers and authority to uphold federal courts, the president's responsibility is inescapable. In accordance with that responsibility, I have today issued an executive order directing the use of troops under federal authority to aid in the execution of federal law at Little Rock, Arkansas.
That was a clip from President Eisenhower talking about his decision to intervene. He is, of course, part of the executive branch of the government and is well within his right or the right of the president, male or female, to intervene in this particular act. And so we celebrate today the work, the sacrifice, the legacy of the Little Rock Nine to break the actual back of Jim Crow in their school system. Even though segregation was illegal, and it was time to integrate, so many white people in this country did not want it to happen and were willing to mete out violence rather than let black children legally attend a school with their white children. Even though it has been years since 1957, I think about that often because we have to understand in this country, when we are looking for change to happen, change does not come easily. Change is something you have to be willing to sacrifice for. Change sometimes is painful. I mean, change is the only way we're going to get to a better place. We are in the midst of that in Baltimore City right now. We are in the midst of some hard changes, taking a long, loving look at the reality of our situation here in this city with 216 murders thus far this year, trying to figure out what type of city do we want to live in? What are we willing to sacrifice to get this city to change? Are you satisfied with Baltimore City as it stands? I took a look at some of the news stories about Baltimore City, and they're not getting any better. We're still on the list in terms of most dangerous cities. We are not moving off in terms of a place where people should not want to move. We're still there. And here we are now, moving into the last half of 2018, and the murder rate is continuing to go up. Did you take a look at the shootings last week? 4 people shot in 1 hour. 5 people shot in 1 hour. Shootouts between the cops and some of our residents. This is what's happening. I went and pulled the testimony by Mayor Catherine Pugh on violence reduction that she gave at the Judicial Proceedings Committee hearing. And what she said in front of this committee was that crime, particularly violent crime, is the biggest issue facing the city of Baltimore. This is our mayor speaking. I am quoting her. Every loss in life in Baltimore due to gun violence is tragic, and the impacts on the community are devastating. Crime impacts more than the victim. The aftermath of violence, crime impacts the victim's family, friends, and community members. The mayor goes on to say, crime holds us back. Violence impacts our children, and far too many children have become normalized to it. The resulting trauma can have negative impacts on children for their entire lives, thus perpetuating the cycle of violence. Our mayor then said, violence reduction is the top priority of her administration. Violence reduction. 216 homicides thus far. Over the weekend, my producer, Justina Pollard, saw a Facebook post from a grandfather sending a letter of apology to his grandson, Self-Made Ying, and that's the title of it, who was recently shot and killed in Baltimore. The grandfather also apologizes to his daughter and all the mothers that lost their children to gun violence. Folks, this grandfather is essentially saying that the responsibility to keep our communities safe, the responsibility is to get our young black men to turn their lives around. The responsibility to put a plug in the violence that we're seeing falls on the shoulders of older black men in this city. I want to talk about that. 410-319-8888. Do you agree? Because they're not listening to me. Let's be very clear. They're definitely not listening to mature black women. They're not listening to young black women. Maybe who they will listen to is who they're modeling their lives after. When is the last time you intervened? I want to talk about that. I have a lot of men who call my show. I am wondering if you believe that the responsibility to stop the violence that's being perpetuated in our neighborhoods, young black men against other young black men, does that responsibility to change it fall on your shoulders? Because if not you, then whom is what I'm trying to figure out. Who is ultimately responsible? Let me take a little read of this, and I'm going to take your calls. 410-319-8888. The phone lines are blowing up. Let's talk about it. Someone's got to do something. They're not listening to me. And I'm going to call myself, you know, Shaniqua Q, female black public. That's who I am. They're not listening to us. Maybe they're listening to you. Maybe the next time you turn a blind eye to it, you should be held responsible. Maybe the next time you walk by and you see a young black man dealing drugs and you don't say anything, maybe you should be held responsible. This grandfather is saying that. Take a listen to this letter, 410-319-8888. Grandson, listen to me. This is all my fault. The tragedies that occur in Baltimore City is blood on my hands. When you were young and your father was locked up and I didn't step up and step in for you and others like you who had fathers that were also incarcerated, I left a void in your soul that nothing else but a real man could fill. When I was selfish with my time and invested only in my personal pleasures and neglected to invest in your future, I blindly caused you to seek guidance among your peers. When I told you, listen to this, folks, this is a letter written by a grandfather whose grandson was killed due to violence here in the city. Listen to this. The grandfather says, when I was selfish with my time and invested only in my personal pleasures and neglected to invest in your future, I blindly caused you to seek guidance amongst your peers. I read that twice, because if the older black men aren't stepping up, then who is guiding the 7-year-olds, the 9-year-olds, the 11-year-olds? If you're not doing it, who's guiding their behavior? Listen to this. He said, when I told you, be careful, jealousy is murder, envy is a shovel, and a smile could be a bullet, I didn't explain how I was your killer. You see, every time I complimented the fresh pair on your feet, a bullet released from my heart. And when I evil-eyed you because of your beautiful girl and the envy caused me to want to be in your fresh pair of shoes, a bullet released from my heart. Because my pride, however foolish, won't allow public debasement, a loss, which is part of the game, another man recognizing the beautiful woman I'm also neglecting, being called a label I've clearly demonstrated that fits me, it triggers my wrath and anger, and my mind won't reason, and all I obsess about is the many ways to kill you. He ends this letter by saying this, Baltimore, my grandson, Self-Made Ying, this is all my fault. So I apologize to your mother and all the other mothers who have sons that I have murdered. I apologize to aunts and uncles and grandparents, sisters and brothers and many, many cousins that I have left empty-hearted. Please, please forgive me. He signs it, Pop. Now, I want to make a note that the daughter responded to her father online and told him not to take responsibility for her son's death because he did have male role models. My question to you today, and I'm talking to all Baltimore City residents and those who live in the DMV area, should black men step up and take this on their shoulders? Should older black men, and you know who you are, the more mature brothers, where you know about life in the street and you've been able to turn your back to it, where you've been able to walk away, where you may have been incarcerated and now your life is back on track, should you take some responsibility for what these young brothers are currently involved in? You know the road they're going down. You can see what's coming out ahead. If there's a hole in the road, I'm trying to figure out, is it your responsibility to point it out to them so they don't fall in it? 410-319-8888. Let's talk about it. I have Gene on the line from Pikesville. Gene, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Dr. K. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Okay, so the answer is, for me, is yes. You know, it's just, across the board, yes, we have to be responsible. But one of the reasons I called in was we were talking about the Arkansas 7.
Little Rock 9?
Arkansas 7. So many 7. New York 7, New York 5.
Yes.
But anyway,
yes.
So that was Orville Farvas.
Yes, the high school.
Was the governor. Mm-hmm. A moderate. He was a moderate.
Mm-hmm.
George Wallace was a moderate. Dixiecrat. So was Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
They came out of that school. So I just wanted to say, and literally, this case was given teeth because of Brown versus the Board of Education.
Right.
So
right. That happened in 1954.
1954.
But 1954 laid the groundwork for what happened in 1957. But you and I both know, Gene, just because the Supreme Court says it so,
yes,
and just because the Congress says it so,
yes,
out in the streets, that's not what was happening.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, integration was not an easy process, and in some places it still hasn't happened.
But they put their teeth was that President Eisenhower brought the troops in and made it happen.
But you know what's interesting? When I was looking at that video clip I played from the Little Rock 9 on Oprah,
yes,
listening to the survivors talk about how they're carrying scars today.
Right.
From pins being stuck in their ankles and
right,
acid being thrown. So even though they were, physically protected writ large, right, that they could go into the school,
they were harassed. They were harassed.
They were harassed.
So I just want to go back just a little bit and talk about during the period before integration and Brown,
right? During
Jim Crow, yeah.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
So let's go back to the NAACP. W.E.D. Du Bois was pro separation,
mm-hmm,
and so the road of integration we went down. That's why a lot of people say now that integration is a failed policy,
right?
And some people don't understand that. But we could have gone the route of getting the money, fixing our schools, because
right,
we had qualified teachers in place at that time.
We did.
To do the necessary things without integration. But they didn't want to invest in it. So I just want to put that out
there.
I'm
glad you said that. I want to say before I go, Gene, first of all, thank you for calling.
Okay.
But I think that that's one of the reasons why Dr. King,
okay,
when he was talking, talked about this notion that perhaps we integrated into a burning house.
Okay, so now I wanted to say about older men being responsible. This is how you step to the plate. Is my son said to me, Dad, the advice is great, but I need you to support me.
Mm. Financially support him?
Support him. So what I did was I purchased him a car.
Okay.
I provided a place for him, a safe haven in the house without charging him rent, and feed him so that he can go to school.
Now, how old is he when he was in college?
Yeah, well, he's in college now, and he's doing whatever. So he said, well, we're going to use a little different strategy. I'm going to do college, but I'm going to find a way to do it where it doesn't burden me, where I come out of school being broke. So what he did was he got into a program, and I told you about this program. It's called Year Up. And so he matriculated through Year Up, came out first, got an internship making $27 learning how to write code. And part of that the support that they give him is they pay for his school.
And it's called the Year Up program. I'm glad you said that. Yeah, I'm make sure that people are reminded of that.
And then he works part-time. He found a part-time job. I think it's called drop shipping. so okay. It doesn't tie up his weaknesses, whatever. Right. So we have to support
We
our
have to
children.
Support them. All right, thank you so much, Gina. I'm going to have to leave it there so I can get some other calls, but I appreciate you. We have Becky on the phone, a new call from West Baltimore. Becky, welcome to the family.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Glad you called.
Yeah, so I wanted to speak to the point where you said about older black men being responsible for the violence in Baltimore City. I think it's unfair to put all of the burden on them, but I do think that it is important that we do note that there is an absence of older black role models in a lot of our young black boys' lives.
Right.
I have six brothers. I have a son of my own. I have several uncles, and my uncles were phenomenal in creating that example for my brothers.
Right.
But there are so many other young men who don't have that type of access. And so when you see those young boys on the streets or in school or in church or wherever you see them and you recognize that they're struggling, rather than judge them and point the finger to say, you need to do, show them the example. So we can preach to them all day and we can tell them how to do the right things, but until we show them, they miss that part. And the other piece of that is these young boys have to be accountable, because at some point they do become responsible for themselves. If the Little Rock Nine can go into a school building every day with all that they face and still hold themselves accountable to their actions, they didn't retaliate. They didn't fight back. They didn't decide that they were going to use their fists. They proved an example. I am good enough to be here. I am qualified to be here. I think a lot of our young black men in the city are focused on all the negative that they hear from the outside world. And that has existed
right.
since been on this soil. And so they allow that to perpetuate their mindset and say, well, they tell me that I can't be any better than this, so I'm going to show them what an animal looks like, instead of changing the narrative. At some point, we have to change that narrative. And so it's important for the mothers even and the women in these lives to teach our sons, our boys, our men, how to control their emotions first. If we can focus on that mental aspect first and then have these other older black men who have gone through this struggle, because like I said, it's existed. They have already done it. Show them how to be successful. How did you see? Yes, he landed in jail, but how many of our brothers are in jail for petty crimes? That really, their white counterparts are serving.
That's
no
what I'm saying.
Any at all, you know?
That's
but
what I'm saying.
They've gone through it, these older men. They've already gone through it, and they created success. We know that a black man built DC. We know that a black man created peanut butter and the light bulb. We know that, but they did not do that without struggle.
There you go. And support. Struggle and support, right, Becky?
And support.
Struggle
exactly
and
right.
support. All right, I'm going to have to leave it there. We have a quick break here. Thank you so much, Becky. James and Curtis, hold on. I'll come to you right after the break. Folks, what we're talking about is whether or not older black men are responsible for what's happening with our young black brothers. Is that something you should be taking on your shoulders? If you don't speak up and lean in, then my next question is, who will? Because they're definitely not listening to me. Maybe they're going to listen to you. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here. We'll talk on the other side. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, we're having a conversation where we're trying to get to the root of who is responsible for leaning in and offering the support to our young brothers who are on the wrong track. If you see a young brother dealing drugs, do you lean in and say something? Do you see a young brother who's in a cycle where he's getting, say, suspended from school? Do you lean in and say something? If you see a young brother disrespecting a young sister, do you lean in and say something? Because if you don't, then who will? And then I want to know whether or not that responsibility falls on the shoulders of our older, more mature brothers in the community. Folks, I think it does. I think if you are a mature black man, maybe over the age 25, 30, I think it falls on your shoulders. I think you are responsible for what's happening, because those brothers look up to you. They will listen to you. You should be leaning in and offering the guidance that they need. How do we turn this corner? We cannot wait for the city to save us. That's not going to happen. I don't think they have any plans to save us. Even though the mayor says violence reduction is at the top of her administration's plans, it's not happening. We're at 216 and counting when it comes to homicides. Who are they listening to? If you don't lean in, I'm talking to the brothers now. If you don't lean in, then who will? Maybe I'm wrong. Let me know if I'm wrong. 410-319-8888. Let's talk about it. I have James on the phone from West Baltimore. James, how are you?
Yeah, good evening. Well, I'll take issue with what you trying to blame this on the older, blame it on the older men. I'm speaking for me.
Okay.
The other guy's story you read, that's not my story.
Mm-hmm.
My story was to raise my family first.
Okay.
And I did it. Now I'm raising my grandkids. That's first my first responsibility. And once I do that, I'm not obligated to nobody else but the Creator. Now, if I choose to go out there and try to help somebody
mm-hmm.
and pull somebody up and make sure somebody stay out of harm's way, I'm going to do that. But I'm not going to let nobody put me on no guilt trip saying it's my fault. Now, if you want to get technical about it, let's talk about the woman. Now, one thing about in the 80s and the 70s, one thing about when a young lady brought a guy to the house, the mother would see right through it. That guy ain't no good.
Mm-hmm.
You think that daughter would listen? That daughter would still go with that man, and she knew that after the mother and the father knew them guy was.
Okay, wait. Hold on, James. I mean, you're talking in hypotheticals. You said that. Wait, hold on. You cannot tell me you're telling the truth unless you have facts and research to back up your story. You're giving me an anecdotal story. You said that your responsibility is to take care of your family and your grandchildren. Is that correct? That's where you started.
That's right.
James, you got to do more than that. You're telling me you have no responsibility to our community, to our people at all, your family?
Listen to me. You misunderstanding what I'm saying.
Well, come on, then.
Listen, the family is first.
I agree with that. What's next?
Now, once I take care of my family, if I'm in the community, of course, I don't even have to say nothing. I could just live by example. When you see me, you're going to see me doing the right thing. You're not going to see me on the corner selling drugs. You're going to see me out here trying to provide for my family and make a way.
Uh-huh.
And if I see you doing wrong, if I choose to say something, I will. Because one thing that I understand, I know there's no self-defense law in the state of Maryland. If I go out there and engage, and listen, I'm keeping it real.
Keep it real. I want you to keep it real. Keep it real.
There.
Come on.
If they out there on the corner selling drugs, I done told them several times, get off the corner.
So
You think I'm going to keep going out there putting myself in harm's way and the police not doing their job?
Come on, but all I'm saying, James, I'm trying to find out here because I think you're speaking truth here. My question is, if we don't lean in, if we don't do something, and I mean we, but I'm talking about you and other black men who are older and mature, if you don't do something, then who will? Just wait till they get arrested?
Okay,
wait till they shoot and kill each other? Like, what do we do?
Why do you want to blame it on the black man?
I'm not blaming. I'm asking you for help. I'm saying
it's... I'm blaming it on a black woman because she's had a poor choice in picking the person that she wanted to have.
Come on. You're giving me anecdotals now.
That's the only way I can see it. She had a poor choice of picking men, and I'm not the first person told her that. She heard it. And some of these women still went out there when they knew these guys were doing wrong and still went out there and stayed with them.
But how do we save the sons? How do we save the sons? The sons, the nephews, the grandsons. How do we save them?
Said, the uncles will step in.
I think we should all be uncles, though, James. Come on now.
I'm not going to let you. I'm not going to let you throw the older black men under the bus like that. Not me anyway.
Not you anyway. All right. Thank you so much, James. Let's see if anyone else agrees with James. Come on now, folks. I think older black men need to step up and lean in. I'm trying to figure out how you disagree. Churches say it. Churches talk about how the older men need to lean in. The Nation of Islam says it. Why is it so different when Dr. K says it? Come on now. We have Curtis on the phone from Northeast Baltimore. Curtis, how are you?
I'm good, Dr. K. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, Dr. K, sorry to say this, but... I'm going to take issue with you on this one, too.
You too?
I'm going to agree with the last one.
Oh,
call,
come
right?
on, Curtis.
Yeah, listen to me, Dr. K. I agree with him when he said his family, our families come first, right?
Right.
And everything after that comes second. Listen, Dr. K, I've had this conversation with you previously, before on other calls, right?
Right.
I've been to prison.
I know.
I did five years in prison, Dr. K. And listen, I when I get a chance to actually speak to some of these young brothers out here on the street, I ask them what they're doing, what you want to do, you know. And I've spoken to a few of them, and they tell me, you know, well, I finished school, and I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to do this. And my words to them is that, you know, don't get a job, get a career.
Right.
Because anybody can get a job. You need a career. So that you can have a future.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
I even And this, the number one thing that I suggest to them, Dr. K, is going in the military, right? Because I wish I would have went in the military.
Right.
Or could have went in the military. A lot of them will tell you they don't want to go in the military because they don't want to go in no white man's army and be fighting no war for them or whatever.
Right.
You understand? And
right.
I understand exactly what they're saying when they say that. But I'll be trying to get them to see that you have very few options right now.
Right.
And I'm going to make a suggestion to you that the best option that I can suggest to you is going into the military.
Which makes sense. You can get your trade, right?
Where can you get... Yeah, you want to be out here shooting up and killing people and things like that? Why don't you just join the military where it'd be legal for you to go and shoot
right.
and kill people? But also, Dr. K, when you try to throw this on us as older men,
mm-hmm.
now what you're trying to do is jeopardize our lives.
Oh, okay.
Wait a minute.
Your life is in danger when you go out to try to help them?
Listen, because you never know what type of situation is going to come about from that. You got some of these young guys out here, Dr. K. It's quite a few of them. You can't say nothing to them.
Right. Okay.
You understand
okay.
what I'm saying?
Okay.
You can't, and hope they don't say nothing to you so that you don't have to become defensive and end up, you know, in a position that you don't want to be in.
Wow.
You
got
to realize, Dr. K,
mm-hmm.
that it's more to it than what you just see. It's not like somebody... You know, it's not like we want to see them out there struggling or doing bad, but they think that the hustle game is about what it is when it's not. I did the hustle thing.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But see, it's people like you that I'm saying, step up because you know the road. You've been incarcerated. You turned your life around. You've been down that road. You saw the game. Who better than to tell them, hey, you know what, brothers? That's not the right path.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, Dr. K, but it's easier said than done.
Okay.
You got young men out here and young women out here trying to make a living, but they don't know, Dr. K, and I'm hoping a lot of them listening right now to what I'm about to say. What they don't know is that the best hustle in this country is a J-O-B.
I completely agree with you.
That's the best
the
hustle,
best hustle is a J-O-B.
You know why?
Why?
Because anything that you obtain from working a 9 to 5 or a 10 to 6 or whatever is worth having. Because when you work for something, Dr. K,
yep.
you learn to value what you have.
All right, I'm about to stop you there, Curtis. Thank you so much. I understand what you're saying. Listen to me, folks. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. I'm being told by brothers right now that I cannot put it on them. Then who do we put it on? If we don't have the older black men step up and lean in, then who's going to do it? Hey, I know it's a heavy burden, folks. I'm with that. Believe me, I understand the heavy burden. But what else can we do to save our community? I mean, right now we're talking, we have an emergency DEFCON level 5. Like, we got nothing left. So maybe what we need right now is older brothers to lean in because we are losing a generation, folks. Losing them. They're not listening to me. They're not listening to older black women at all. They're not listening to young black women at all. Maybe they need older black men who've been down that road to lean in, folks. You can't tell me you're not responsible in some way, shape, or form. We have Donnell on the phone. He's a new caller from Rosedale. Donnell, welcome to the family.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
Thank you for accepting my call.
Absolutely.
Man, one thing I want to say is that, yeah, we all have to step up at some point. You know what I mean? It's all our responsibility to make sure that, you know, our people thrive and survive. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, a lot of guys don't want to take that position because, for whatever reason, but the thing of it is that these young boys, just like when I was a young boy, I'm 52 years old, didn't nobody tell me anything about the streets, or, you know, I had to learn as I went along.
Right.
You know,
that's dangerous,
I mean?
Though, right? Come on, Donnell. That's dangerous. Learning as you go along.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
What I'm saying is, and I've been down there, I've been in the drug game, I've been in the prison and all that. And I had, when I'm not working, I had. So I see a lot of these young dudes that other people scared to pick up, but I pick up and I get to rap to some of them. And I be telling them, man, yo, some of this stuff that y'all doing, But I don't use, you know, I talk to them in their language.
Right.
That's what they need.
Right.
They need somebody to not sugarcoat things the way they're being sugarcoated.
Right, right. But to lay it out, to be real. Yes.
You got to talk to them raw. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to give it to them raw, because that's the only way that they understand things is raw. And they know when people BSing them.
Yeah, they can tell,
you know
right?
What I mean? But they also know when somebody is being real with them. And when I talk to them, the first thing they say is, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't want to be in this, but I got to feed my family. I got to do this in the third, you know, and I can understand that. But at some point, like what I tell them, at some point, it's going to get old. It's going to get played out. Everything comes to an end.
It does. It does.
You know what I mean?
Everything I know what you mean. I'm going to stop you there, Donnell. Thank you so much. We have Harrison on the phone. Harrison's a new caller from Owens Mill. Welcome to the family, Harrison.
Small coffee, green sugar. Hello.
Hello. So what do you think, sir?
Your name is Dr. K.
I'm Dr. K. Hello. How are you, Harrison? Can you hear me?
I can hardly hear you, man. I'm sorry.
Okay, you know, hold on 1 second, Harrison. Justina's going to fix his line. While Harrison's line is being fixed, let me go on to Cheryl, a new call from East Baltimore. Cheryl, welcome to the family.
Well, good afternoon, Dr. K.
How you doing?
Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
I got the brothers hot up in here, Cheryl.
I know. And you know what? It's one thing about us is that we're always trying to pinpoint a blame. And when I was coming up, you know the old saying, it took a village to raise a child.
Uh-oh.
Not the man, not the one. It took a village to raise a child. When I walked out of my house and I did wrong, my neighbors got on me.
Mm.
When I went to school, the teacher got on me. But then, I think it was the 60s, the parents said, you do not discipline my child.
Oh, okay.
So we can't do that anymore. So we learned to keep our mouths shut, and that's what where the problem all started. It's like we all can't raise your child anymore. You don't want us to raise your child.
I'm so glad you called. You know what, Cheryl? It takes a village. I'm going to go with that. It takes a village. But I'm thinking, before I let you go, I'm saying in this time we're talking about leaning in. Direct intervention is what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Who's better to do that than brothers who've been there? Brothers that can be role models. I mean, they actually might listen to the brothers quicker than they might listen to me.
Well, that is true. But then you got kids who don't want to listen to either one.
Yeah, it's true, too.
You got to get them at the impressionable age when they are very young. Because once they get to that preteen, they don't want to listen to a man or a woman. I don't care what you try to say to them.
So we're talking. You know? So we need to focus our attention on the young ones. There's a generation right now that pretty much we just have to write off.
I hate to say it.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough. Thank you so much, Cheryl. Folks, listen to that. Cheryl is now saying that we just need to focus our attention on the babies, and we need to write off the current young brothers because they're not listening to anyone. I don't know about that. We got to really talk about that because that is huge. We have Reginald on the phone. Reginald is a retired Baltimore police officer. Reginald, how are you?
Hi, how you doing? My name, I've been a cop for a long, long time, over 35 years. I've worked federally. I'm in agreement with the young woman. Basically, we've got to write the current black kids off. They don't want to listen anymore. It's really sad. When I see things on the street, even now, you know, I still try to interject, you know, try to tell them about their appearances. Nobody wants to see somebody's drawers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I'm in the grocery store with my wife, and I see drawers. I don't need to see that, you know. So I tell them about it. The friction afterwards is the bad part about it, you know. And I don't want to shoot anybody because of a disagreement, you know. So I don't say anything anymore, you know? It's bad.
It is bad. It is bad. Yeah. Thank you so much, Reginald, for calling. So what I'm trying to understand, and this is, you know, my call and my charge I put out to older black men. What I'm hearing from the black men that have already told me that they feel like I'm throwing them under the bus, that I'm putting it all on their shoulders. It's not their responsibility. They should only take care of their family and their grandkids. Folks, we have a generation of young brothers and some sisters as well. They're out here shooting and killing. Now, you know, we could talk all day about the man and about society and how they are to blame. And they are. Don't talk to me about institutionalized racism. I study it. I know all about that. I'm just wondering, is it time for older black men to lean in? Should you take this on your shoulders? A grandfather released a statement. His grandson, dealing drugs, got killed. He put a letter out saying, you know, that is my fault. I should have leaned in. I should have done more. He apologized to every single mother, sister, grandmother, uncle, aunt, who lost a young black man here in Baltimore City. He said, it's our fault. I want to give a couple of Facebook post shout out. Gabrielle Francis checks in from Facebook Live, and she's saying, she's been trying to call, but she has to say this. I'm disgusted by these so-called men saying they are not responsible for our youth. If we are not responsible, then who is? This is our community and our people. We have to grab hold of these kids while we can, because when they become men, they will be too far gone. These kids are a reflection of ourselves. And over here, Ogneg Zenitron has also chimed in. We need to be honest with ourselves as a community and look at how we are raising these kids. These young brothers are raised to be exactly what they are. Omar Savory has also checked in. He said he can't call right now, but the thing is, money talks. I can talk to young brothers till I'm blue in the face. I might reach one or two if lucky, but if I can create opportunities like jobs and sports activities and creative outlets to lead to better living, I think there's a chance to save them on a broader level. Apart from that, my talking won't put any perceived hope or money in their pocket, which is what they feel that they need. But at least Omar's talking about solutions, doing some sports programs, creative outlets. Some of you tell me, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm only worried about my own kids and my grandkids. Folks, we're losing this city. I'm letting people know right now, the war is going on right now, and we are losing 216 homicides. We're losing. Are you willing to lose the city? Let's talk about it. 410-319-8888. I have Clarence on the phone from Northwest Baltimore. Clarence, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. K. Dr. K, I'm going to say what you don't want to hear.
Uh-oh.
Okay, I'm going to just put it out there like this. You're inferring that it's somehow an older black man such as my age responsibility to fight the construct after the fact.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I will engage in any young person that I happen to run into, but let's not even go there. You kind of dismiss structural racism.
No.
Can I explain?
Let me explain, Clarence. I'm not going to hang up here. Let me explain. When I said don't talk to me about institutionalized racism, I want to be clear. Folks, I'm not skating over the constructs. You know I do a lot of work and talk about that on this show. What I was trying to focus on today, Clarence, was about how do we take some responsibility in this matter. That's what I was trying to get to. How do we take some responsibility? Like, we can blame the system, but these are our kids, Clarence.
No. Well, some people, you know, when somebody says they're concentrating on taking care of their family and their grandchildren, I understand that.
Okay.
And that very same person, when the opportunity presents itself, he still might engage in trying to talk to one of the brothers, too. Okay. But at the same time, the inference that black men have to deal with the construct after the effects of the construct have already hit our community and done the damage. No, there are black folks out here like me who don't want to deal with nothing after the fact.
Mm.
We're not interested in after the fact. We're interested in saving the community. How? How can we do this? Well, first of all, we got to remove the police and start policing ourselves. Can we?
Right.
Oh, that's just preferred. Mm.
you know, nonsense there. Then I got to deconstruct the school system and build the school system to teach them. Then I have to develop an economic system that's going to support them. And the last one, and least of all, I got to go up against the drug importers,
not the dealers.
When you want to put that there, you can't dismiss all of that because you're talking about after the fact. And people like me, we don't want to deal with after the fact. We want to go head on. But we are not we cannot do that. We don't have the power to do that. And the black community would not support any of us who stepped out there like that.
Ooh.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Clarence. Folks, Clarence is laying it out there. So we understand about systemic racism, institutionalized racism. So are we saying, and I got to put this out here and be very real, are we saying that we're just going to write this generation off because they're not listening? We can't change the system. We can't get them new schools. We can't give them heat. We can't give them clean water. We can't get rid of the rats. We can't change their community. We can't do any of that. So we might as well just write this whole generation off and let them just shoot and kill each other. Is that what we're saying? We have Rob on the phone from Baltimore. Rob, how are you?
Is this Miss Shaniqua Q Public? Hey, Doc, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing well.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay, but you said it. So let me give you some facts, and I'm going to do it real quick.
Okay.
Okay, number one, when it comes to the people who are purchasing the drugs, it's the older guys that are doing it.
Man.
That's how the guys make their money.
Oh, man.
Okay? Mm. Okay, now, you know, I'm a recovering drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
I was out there. I know what I'm talking about.
Wow.
And you think they're going to go out there and try to get little Johnny off the corner?
Oh, man.
And he said, yeah, okay. I got something good for you today. I said it. Yes, I said it. Now, I'm sure there'll be those who are going to give you a rebuttal.
Yes.
And also, these young guys are helping mama take care of that house. Mm. They bring that money into her. And also, they buy tennis. That's what they're concerned about. And this, there's a generation that's lost. So you better catch them while they're young babies.
Yeah, we got to get them young. Thank you so much, Rob. Yes, I'm Shaniqua Q Public right now, folks. We have Anthony on the phone, a new caller from East Baltimore. Anthony, welcome to the family, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So I just wanted to say that we're having a conversation, and this is a conversation that me and my fiance have all the time. And the conversation is between two people that know better. And two people that are not involved in that life.
Right.
But somehow the conversation is never being held with the people you actually trying to help.
That's true. That's true.
And right now, I mean, to keep it 100, the guys that we talking about, they're not listening to 88.9 right now.
No, they're not. No, they're not. So how do we reach them, though? How do we reach them, Anthony? What do we do?
This is my thing. And I try not to tell this story a lot, but I'm going to tell it to you.
Please do.
I was in prison for a little while, and I happened to be a inmate representative. And to make a long story short, I was able to pull the heads of the different gangs together. And I asked the young ones then why they acted the way that they acted. And what they told me out of their mouths was that, hey, when you left the street, you didn't leave instructions on how we were supposed to do this. So we made it up how we went along. And we're alive. We may not be in the best of situations, but we're alive and we've made it. So this is why we do it the way that we do it.
Wow.
And though, at that point right there, I apologize to them for not leaving the instructions or at least being there to instruct them to go a different way.
Right.
So, yes, I do believe it is our responsibility. And one other thing I'm going to say before I don't want to take up too much time is that if they aren't listening to you, for the ones who are saying something.
Right.
You know what I mean? They just might not be listening to them either.
Right.
So the effort might have to be way bigger than us. But for the time being, and for the question that you asked, yes, I think it's each and everybody's responsibility.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Right. I appreciate you calling. I really appreciate you saying this. Folks, let's keep talking here. We have Colin on the phone from Baltimore. Colin, how are you?
Well, Dr. K, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Right. Some of these responses from these air quote black men is very disheartening.
It is very disturbing.
It's a shame that some black men feel that it is not their responsibility as a people, not as your personal family member,
right,
but as just a people and your community, that you feel like you don't have a responsibility in the healthy, how healthy it is as a community and as we are as a people. That's very disheartening. And it's quite frankly, it's embarrassing. I'm like, where's your heart and your gut? I mean, do you even care other than your family and
right,
other than yours? What about everyone else? I mean, that's just about the case. I'm like sick with some of these these answers from black men. So you say, who was supposed to help? Well, who is supposed to help us if you only care about your address?
That's
who is supposed to come to our defense? And given all of the circumstantial evidence that we go through, the systems that are created, that have been created, even still, we still have to live and survive.
Yes.
So who is it on? It is on us. It is absolutely on us men. We have dropped the ball over generations. Yes, we have. And absolutely, no, you don't give up on a generation, because there are some men out here now that used to be these knuckleheads back in the day that got rehabilitated.
Yes, they got out. They got turned around.
You cannot. Dr. K, I work with high school boys that are in these same positions and conditions that we're talking about. And no, you can't reach and you can't save every single one. But that does not mean that you stop working and attempting to try to help people.
And you do more. Yes.
Exactly. You continue to do more. You reach those in your immediate circle. We can't save the world. No. But you can save who you can save, or you can attempt to do so.
All right. I'm going to stop you there, Colin. I got to stop you there. I'm so sorry. We got to take a quick break here, folks. A hard break. When we come back, James, Valerie, Chuck, Judy, I'm coming to you. The question is, who is responsible for saving the young black brothers? I think it's the older black man. Many of you disagree. 410-319-8888. Keep it here for a quick update from MTA. We're going to talk again on the other side.
Problems on the MTA commuter buses. Light Rail Link is on time. However, it is discontinued through October the 4th for maintenance and rail replacement on the northern end between the Timonium Fairgrounds and Hunt Valley stops. The Local Link number 93 bus is operating between the affected stations to accommodate riders. At present, we are seeing about a 10-minute delay on the northbound side of the light rail. Bus diversions include the Brown Line northbound at Broadway and Biddle, the Purple Line westbound diverted at Lombard and Monroe, and the Purple Line eastbound diverted at Pratt and Pulaski. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.